In the Booth with Matt Park is brought to you by Hoffman Sausage Company.
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a columnist.
I don't believe what I just saw!
You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
Yeah, yeah, you make good comments.
So what about that?
Well, you know, they tend to give those jobs to ex-ball players and people that are, you know, in broadcast.
What about a talk show host?
This is In the Booth.
Talk show host, that's good.
I think I'd be good at that. I talk to people all the time.
With Matt Park.
Welcome, everybody, In the Booth. And happy Valentine's Day to one and all. It is Friday afternoon. Heading into a busy weekend, both on campus and beyond for SU sports. And we'll talk it all with you today. You can join us by phone at 315-437-7644. That's 315-4-ESPN-44. Hi to everybody watching on the Twitch platform. We're at Cuse Sports Talk on Twitch, twitch.tv/Cuse Sports Talk. Tommy's at the board as always, and Brian Higgins alongside here today, back from a big women's basketball win last night in Chapel Hill, and set that one up, Brian, going into it as two teams kind of in the middle of the pack. And at this stage in the season, certainly every win is meaningful, and the absence of a loss is obviously what you're looking for right now at minimum, and a big win there. So the women are all of a sudden kind of on track here where they might be able to get something done.
I mean, they're now 5 games left. We went into last night, 6 games left. Carolina was right there. They've been struggling the last week. I mean, they've had a pretty good season so far. Then the game was 4-4 for a while. Kind of got stuck. Like, whoa, this is not going great. And then the team, it was kind of like a slow acceleration. Second quarter, it's like, oh, pretty good. And then third quarter, Q calls a timeout. A minute and a half in, Carolina came out, made a couple shots at the beginning of the half, and then out of that timeout just blew their doors off for the next 18 minutes. It was a really impressive showing. I think they kind of took Carolina's spirit there down the stretch. That game was done by late in the third quarter, realistically. And that's a big win because next two games are against literally the worst two teams in the league. So if you go get those, now you got 9 league wins. And then it sets up for a stretch run with Notre Dame, who's really struggling. NC State, who's one of the best two teams in the league on the road. And then BC, who you've already beat at home. If you can go 4-1 down the stretch and say maybe the NC State game is a loss, I think you're at minimum in the mix. And if you can do something like go down and beat NC State, you just beat Louisville, and Louisville beat NC State last night, now I think you're good. Like, yeah, your season ends today, you're not good. You just don't have enough total wins yet. But they have set themselves up after a rough middle of January there to at least get themselves back in the mix, which 2 weeks ago I would not have said was really realistic anymore.
Yeah, the lead went from like 6-20 or something pretty
like
quickly last
confusingly
night.
Confusingly fast.
Yeah, and those are the types of things where you really feel the rhythm and the style of play that the women's basketball team under Coach Q prefers, and that's how it can happen when things are going well. So women home on Sunday, big lacrosse weekend in the meantime, and a lot happening there, even ice hockey and a bunch of different things going on while everybody's making their Valentine's weekend plan. No crunch are home tonight, and that's a big one we've been talking about here on the show throughout the week, and an opportunity, I think, for a fan to want a contest during the week to sit in the Galaxy Suite and then take it in first class. Do it classy tonight, the Crunch and Comet. Coming up in a few moments, our guest on the show today will be Kevin Burkhart of Fox Sports, and we can run the gamut with Kevin, but in particular want to hit baseball. That's all coming to a head now with the Astros cheating scandal, the reaction, their attempt to bury it and move on from it, obviously not going well as spring training begins. And week 2 of the XFL, which for various reasons is sort of in the consciousness, and they're doing a pretty good job of kind of presenting this. When you can start a league from scratch in the social media era, the content creation era that we're in now, and they've made some choices here and done some things that have kind of put that out in the forefront. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy at the moment. It's treated like it's a big deal and you're supposed to care, and so maybe we care a little bit more. Week two is this weekend, and everybody can get another look at that.
I'll be interested to see if, and by me see, you or whoever's, I kind of got stuff going in, like during XFL season right now. We won't tell Kevin that. But they showed on all these broadcasts, I mean, you were listening to play calls like all game long.
Right.
And then the coaches afterwards, like, what?
Right.
It's like, hey, we told you this was happening. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me all of the words. Like, no, we told you this was happening. And I guess what, Jim Zorn and Pep Hamilton were two of the ones I saw their names.
I saw Zorn for sure, yeah. And I wasn't sure about others.
Zorn was the one that had
me.
The most things, but yeah, I'm not sure I want all that out there. Well, it's out there, and I think I'd be interested to see if they reel back on it at all, and I'd hope they don't, because, all right, hey, you coaches, you agreed, you're in the XFL now, you knew things were going to be a little wacky, like we're not doing the kooky non-football stuff like XFL 1, but... This is access. You're seeing behind the curtain. And football coaches, we know this, are like it's the CIA sometimes. And this for them has got to be like
well, that's what I say.
Insane.
Jim Zorn, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he basically said, I think coaches feel like, well, because you know that Viper, Donkey, Tomato is a run to the right, that to them is akin to being naked in the middle of Times Square. They feel completely violated by all of that. And I don't think that to me, when you're watching a game, is interesting. That's not revealing anything. The comment that I saw from Jim Zorn that I totally get is, I'm glad I didn't melt down. Now, what if you are, you know, nobody, we're being facetious a little bit with our interest here in the XFL, but let's say you are a New York Guardians fan and you see... Well, to think about with your own NFL teams, whoever you like, there have been controversial calls or go for it or don't go for it. But you're going to be let in on that. It's going to happen where either somebody melts down, they don't get a play call in time, and you're going to have seen it and know why. The quarterback says, screw you, I'm running my play. Any number of other things that they do.
The next play call is them being informed that they shouldn't have.
Well, potentially.
What the bleep were you doing?
But I got something for you. When it's, you know, Donkey, Tomato, Linda, that's to the left.
Well, was it Zorn? This is what I might have seen from Pat Hamilton. He's like, now everyone knows that the plays that end at even numbers are runs to the right, and the ones with odd numbers runs to the left.
Everybody who plays Pop
Warner. Oh, big code, Pep. You had that real disguised. Yeah, no one had figured that one out yet.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, something, something. Randy, they're going to the right.
Yeah. Like all those play, and I realize it's a whole different era, like all the Don Coryell, like 787, all that stuff, the play calls, like that stuff has meant the same thing for years, and I realize it's more complex than that, whatever, but you pull the curtain up and give people a little thing, and you hear the play call and the verbiage, and then the play happens. As a fan, you sort of feel like you know what's going on.
Sure.
And that's a neat twist, and I hope they don't take it away.
And I'm sure that I'm making more of this, but I do kind of like it. Contrasted with or juxtaposed with the Astros stuff, right? So the Astros, they're sign stealing, right? So it's supposed to be a secret. What the pit? If you had to explain it to somebody who's not a sports fan, we just grabbed on the street. What's this whole thing about? Well, the batter is supposed to be in the dark about what pitch is coming. The pitcher and the catcher have a communication system that can go from very simple to sophisticated about what pitch is coming. The catcher needs to know. The fielders ideally would like to know what pitch it is, because they are going to react certain ways. But the hitter's supposed to be in the dark, and the Astros have taken steps to inform the hitter and to know the inside scoop on what pitch is coming. Well, it's scandalous that they did that. Now, here on a football game where they've all come up with these complicated plays and audibles and all that to keep secret what their intentions are and what the plays are, now it's being revealed right in front of our faces. Now, the linebacker isn't getting to hear the play call and get let in on that, but week to week you could. I mean, there's nothing stopping you now from going back and correlating play call to what play was run and make some observations there, and certainly that happens in football anyway. So
you kind of wish they just have like a gentleman's agreement, like, hey, we're not going to do that.
That'd be great.
And I realize that's just not how the world works, but... Like, hey, this is the league we all signed up to play in. We're not in the NFL. We all want to be in the NFL. We're not.
That's the part of it.
Like, this is what this is. Let's just, you're going to call your play. We're not going to eavesdrop. We're not going to watch it on TV and yell it out the window. We're not going to know it. We're going to play it straight up and call our plays and do it normal. And people are going to listen into us do it like We were doing it if you weren't eavesdropping on it. Like let's just play football this way. It wouldn't really change the football for them if you weren't doing it. That's just what they'd always have been doing anyway. Just do it up. Gentlemen's agreement, play some football, and we're eavesdropping. That would be cool.
Yeah, and the coaches all know what they signed up for, and I think your point is right on the head. We'll ask Kevin Burkhardt about it here in a moment. You're not in the NFL. You were hired by the league to play in this. These are the parameters. Everybody knows this isn't a surprise. We'll get into that. Kevin Burkhardt of Fox Sports will be our guest in just a moment. We're brought to you, as always, by the Hoffman Sausage Company. Bring in the meats. Hoffman, born in Germany, raised in Syracuse. Hoffman taste tells. More to come as we roll along in the booth on ESPN Radio.
On Twitch, Q Sports Talk and ESPN Radio 97.7 at 100.1. In the Booth with Matt Park is brought to you by Hoffman Sausage Company.
That is a truism as we join you today on a Friday on ESPN Radio Syracuse and the Twitch app, twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. Good to have you along with us. We head to the Burdick Toyota guest line and welcome in our friend from Fox Sports, the great Kevin Burkhardt. Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Matt, Brian, good to be back with you guys. How's things over in the Qs?
Good. Happy Valentine's Day.
And cold, I'd imagine.
It is cold. You know I'm defensive about the weather here, but there's not much you can say today. It is crisp. I would say it's not maybe as bad as 1 or 2 or 3 degrees would suggest because it actually is sunny. It's not always sunny here. Very frequently is, actually, or very rarely is. But we're going to get
sunny
by and
good.
Then get to fly to South Georgia today, Tallahassee. Which is more Georgia than it is Florida,
but it really is, right?
At any rate, yeah, Florida State baseball opening tonight, so that might be a little bit of a diversion if there's time between that and the dinner. Staff dinner tonight, Kevin, and you might imagine just the slightest tinge of nervousness on my part. We're going to a restaurant that I picked and recommended to Coach Boeheim, so if it doesn't go well, my invites might dwindle from here on out.
That's like a curb your enthusiasm episode because like you feel proud about your place and you want to go to your place and you know you like it so you know you're going to enjoy it but then there is that nervous like man I hope everybody else, I certainly hope Coach Boeheim's enjoying it so your status level really depends on if the meal is prepared well. That's a lot of pressure tonight, Matt.
Yeah, well, I think the range in response will go from that's the best you're going to get to. You know, cut off complete communication. So it's almost imperceptible, but we'll know, and we'll be able to tell the story to everybody. But for their first team, all Brussels sprouts, which is not a.
Do we know how he feels about Brussels sprouts?
I don't know. He doesn't have to order them. More for me.
There we are.
No, he's a veal marsala kind of guy. So if they have that or something like that on the menu, he'll be good.
I love Brussels, man.
There you go.
I could eat those all day.
There you go. So I think the last time we had you on was you were in the midst of hosting the World Series, and we got talking about, you know, certainly the Astros in one context, and we don't have to waste a lot of time. I'm sure you've already been talked out on yesterday's mess and their lack of apology and all this, but let's look forward a little bit in terms of what should we expect in the coming season. And I thought really about the pressure that is on the number of good players. Everybody would say the Astros have, you know, 4 or 5 of the very best players in the game. The pressure for them to keep their numbers up and to be productive this year is going to be astronomical, knowing that at any point they could take one in the ear hole. And if they have any drop off, the conclusion is going to be that all they've done before is because they were cheating.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thought, and I think I'll get one step further. I think the perception of what they hit on the road is a big, you know, their legacy is on the line here. I mean, Cody Bellinger said yesterday, Altuve stole the MVP, right. You know, they stole the World Series. I mean, so, like, you know, we all have our thoughts about these players, and I still think they're excellent players. I don't think that this made them not be excellent, you know, players. I think they didn't need it, and they got intoxicated by this system, and they wrongfully used it. But I do agree that, you know, look, last year some of their home road splits were pretty exorbitant in difference at home. Altuve was number one. I mean, I don't remember. It's a while now, but gosh, was he 450 at home and 2 something on the road? Jeez. So I do think that is a big deal in terms of legacy now going forward. And, you know, you don't know where the actual line of demarcation is, but we're going to assume that it's right now. And I'm with you. So I think there's a lot on that team. I mean, a new general manager, a new manager, but essentially, you know, not all the same, obviously, with guys like Gerrit Kolgan, but, you know, essentially the same, you know, star cast. And how do they respond to that? I mean, it's going to be, I think it's going to be interesting on a lot of levels. Certainly the first series with the Yankees, certainly the first game. It's like you said, are guys going to get, you know, wear one in the back in between their numbers? I'm not really sure, but I think that's kind of the side story to see how their fellow players kind of handle it.
You kind of brought up some there, Kevin, about the idea of, we always talk about, you know, baseball unwritten rules. You take too long to run out a home run, you get drilled in the ribs the next time around, or things little like that. Like, this is such a completely different category of anything. Is that the retaliation, or is this just you're going to have the rest of the players in baseball pissed at you, and that's just kind of what you got to deal with this year?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's it. I mean, you know, I think, hey, if you know, it's hard to say, right? Like, you could say, hey, if Chapman's pitching to Altuve, well, usually in those spots, it's a one-run game in the ninth inning. So is he going to put a guy on? I don't know the answer to that. But, I mean, it's one way to do it. I just think, if anything, not that teams aren't gearing up to play the Astros anyway because they're very, very good, but it certainly puts an absolute bullseye on them, right? I mean, it just does. And I think it adds the pressure. That's a group that responds well to pressure they always have. I just think the shame of it is this. You know, I just don't know that they needed it. I really don't. I mean, you know, they you know, everybody is stealing signs, and then the way that it's been done in the league, you know, without the level they took it to. I think they're probably good enough at doing that and just good enough players. I mean, they're tremendous players that probably didn't need to do any of this to get to the points that they are. I mean, you know, the thing is, you go back to the 2017 World Series, you know, I don't think – you know, it was on the road, and I'm not sure that anything they did in the first inning allowed Yu Darvish to melt down on them to blow the game open in Game 7. Now, getting to Game 7 is a different story, right? Like, how do they get there, especially that Game 5 when they had two huge comebacks against Clayton Kershaw? So the unfortunate thing is you'll never know what was actually helpful and what wasn't. But I think the shame for their legacy is that they just didn't have to. They were good enough without it, and now no one will believe that. That's kind of the issue.
Just quickly checking here, unless I miss something. Altuve last year, regular season at home, 306 and 18 home runs. On the road, 291 and 13 home runs. And I do think it's worth pointing out that he does play in a hitter-friendly ballpark.
Maybe I was thinking of somebody there. There was somebody.
Well, there's a couple, a couple that were insane.
Something we were looking at. I can't remember what it was in the postseason, but obviously I was wrong on that one. But there was stuff we were looking at in the postseason. I just don't remember it now.
No, what you're talking about very well could have been on the money as far as postseason. I'm looking at the long haul of the regular season. And I did see a couple guys that in small sample sizes were ridiculous. You know, 430 at home and, you know, 078 on the road or something like that. So who, you know, really knows? At the end of the day, the players do. They were given immunity, which is probably the real problem in this whole deal in terms of the way that they were treated and are basically exempt from punishment. And to me, it's fascinating. There's no way now for it not to hang over the head of the Astros the whole year. I don't know what would have changed it in terms of a mea culpa at spring training, but they clearly haven't done that. I mean, the owner looks like a buffoon. Dusty Baker, hey, I wasn't part of this. Please forgive us, you know, baseball. And a couple guys that, you know, certainly he's respected. And the guys they've put out in front of the media, Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve here, are basically left hung out to dry in a very difficult position. So we'll see what impact it has on them and their season and their production, etc. Switching gears, you're in L.A., and Brian here happens to be a Red Sox fan, but it's just astonishing to think the level of talent now that's in that Dodger clubhouse, and they got to be loaded with Mookie Betts being added.
Well, it's not bad when you can add a top five player in the game, right? I mean, I think the only thing, you know, missing from the Dodgers was that monstrous acquisition. We all were kind of expecting it because, I mean, look, they're the class of the league, right? I mean, they've won the NL West what, six straight times. They are phenomenal. They've got a chance to win the World Series every year. Obviously, the Nationals got them in the first round last year, but you know, I think when you look at it, with all the money they have, with all the revenue they have, with their attendance being what it is, which is usually first in Major League Baseball, this couple of the trade deadlines have gone by, and they've made moves. They got Machado a couple of years ago, and that was obviously a big move with Seager hurt. But I think people around here felt like, okay, like it's not they're so close, but they haven't won. They obviously got there 2 years in a row and lost. You know, at some point, you know, it's kind of desperation time with this group. It's time to make the big splash. And they were kind of resistant because what they've done a good job of is having these stars, but continually bringing up, you know, great players from the minor leagues. And I don't think they wanted to break that cycle. But I just think the timing is right. You know, Mookie turned down that $300 million offer. The timing was right. You go for it. I mean, this team is built to win now. And if you don't get it out of this group, and they still have a ton of young players, so I'm not trying to say that their window's closing, but I think at some point, you know, you got to say, hey, are we just going to go over the top and make that move or not? So I like it. I like that they did, and good luck to the National League for trying to beat that.
I'd say, Kevin, almost everything, though, you said to describe the Dodgers, say for not having won the World Series, describes the Red Sox. Top revenue, attendance, year in and year out. And they are like, well, we had to trade him. There was no way around it. We had to trade the best homegrown player that they've had probably since Carly Stremski. I mean, what reason is there for Red Sox fans to believe that? I mean, in my mind, it's just, yeah, I get it, luxury tax and all that. But in my mind, as a baseball move, it's just craziness.
Well, it is. I don't disagree with you there. For a team like that, it's insane to trade a guy who is universally liked, a great community guy, a great teammate, and, you know, top five player in the game. But the only thing I could say is this, you know, for a team that is continually over the luxury tax, and, you know, for a guy that said, nope, $300 million isn't enough, well, what's enough? You know, and if you're an owner of any team, I mean, I don't know, is it smart to pay, you know, is Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, is that going to be worth $300 million? I didn't even know that those guys were playing in the league last year. We got to a point in the second half of the season, to be honest, because it just didn't matter. They were on teams that were, you know, obviously the Padres were fun the first half and they faded away, and the Phillies were clearly in the mix, but it never felt like those guys had monstrous effects on their new team. I'm not saying they aren't great players, but I guess it comes to a point where you have to do the analytics and say, okay, what are we going to pay, $500 million? And maybe he's worth it, but everybody's got their price or their limit, and I guess he just pushed the limit for them. I mean, it's tough because of it. He represents everything you want. He's great at every facet of the game. He is a terrific guy. So from that standpoint, it's very, very hard. But, you know, everybody's got their price and everybody's got their line. And there aren't many of those guys of those contracts that come back to actually be worth it. Mike Trout might be worth it when it's all said and done, but there's not many. Max Scherzer has been worth it for Washington. But I think you have a hard time finding many over $200 million that have been an absolutely fantastic signing.
As we say all the time, rich people are rich for a reason. They make decisions like this, and they've got to have a limit at some point. And I think you make a great point in as much as, you know, I keep an eye on the Nationals. My brother lives in D.C. A lot of fun to go to the games. But Bryce Harper, he got his pay, but just was on a team that didn't really deliver last year, and he's sort of out of the consciousness. If contracts like that bring your team to where you can't get anybody else, then you have to really wonder whether it's worth it. But we'll see how it shakes out. It's fun to be talking baseball.
And by the way, on that point, Matt, they won the World Series without him.
I mean, right.
That's not to say that it was his fault, but, I mean, it's like when you look at that, you're like, huh, all right, right?
It is amazing.
It definitely is for the owner argument, I'll say that.
Well, it comes back to the whole idea, and this is, we won't bore you with it and take up all your time, but the idea of what is your value above the replacement? You know, if you have somebody else that can go in there, certainly as the Nationals did with young people that can play about as well for less money, significantly less money, then that's what you're looking for. All right, quick transition. Kevin, you've got the XFL Week 2, Battle of the Unbeatens, division leaders, right? Ooh. How about that? Right off the bat, St. Louis and Houston. This thing has... So far, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Curious what you think about it, but the way this has been packaged, to me, looks like all systems are go right now.
Yeah, I, listen, 1 week, how do you not like it? I think, you know, I think the challenge with a new league is, okay, can you sustain it, right? So the ratings were great. People were not only watching, a lot of people were watching, but they watched for a long time. And I see why. I mean, I had fun doing the games. It was so unique, all the access that we had, all the different unique things that we were able to do, you know, listening to a replay official over a replay, you know, hearing play calls on a third down and five, you know, and the rule tweaks were not anything that made it into, you know, a cartoon. The rule tweaks were really well thought out ideas that they're trying, and they're different and they're fun. So, you know, I think it comes down to this, guys, and I don't know if you agree, but so I love week one. I loved everything I saw. I love the innovations. I love the access. It's great. I mean, you're interviewing a guy after he throws a touchdown 2 seconds later. I mean, it's just so cool. You know, my crew is doing the Tampa-New York game, and I asked Mark Trestman why he kicked a field goal on, you know, the last possession, like, you know, a minute and a half after it happened. I think the thing that has to keep it sustainable is the football's got to be decent. And in week one, the football was decent. It's not the NFL. It's not going to be, and I don't think they're trying to be the NFL. But if the football is decent quality, and then you have all these different fun innovations that kind of take you to a place that no sport has ever taken you, why wouldn't you watch? I'd watch it. I just happen to be doing it, but I would watch it. So that's kind of my take. If the football continues to play like that, I think the league will play and do well.
All right, quickly on this one, we'll let you run. So Jim Zorn and some of the other coaches have come out and said, oh, really? We didn't know that's what you had in mind as far as all the access, and that we would literally be hearing the play call, and very frequently you're hearing the call made by the offensive coordinator as he is expressing it, right to that you're hearing in real time as the quarterback is hearing it. That to me is a lot of fun. I think it really could change the game in terms of television. There's a lot of offshoots of that can be provocative and interesting. Any reason to think that pushback will make that go away or that'll be changed?
No, I don't. I think that was part of the. I think that was part of the deal. That is part of the deal, and I don't believe that they didn't know that. I think they maybe didn't love as much as it was played, and I think each network handled it a little differently. If you watch both, the philosophies were a little different. But I'll tell you this: we talked to Mark Trestman, and he designed and tagged plays differently. He has different tags for different plays going forward, anticipating this. So I don't believe that a couple of coaches had no idea, and yet one of them is like tagging his plays differently for the next 6 weeks, and he already planned that before week one. So I think it's here to stay, and I love it. I'm with you, Matt. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's fun. A lot of fun to watch, and maybe this has already happened and I've missed it. I watched a couple of the broadcasts last weekend, but I can't wait until the time when the quarterback says, you know what? No, that's not the play we're going to run right now. And does something different. And we're all going to know because we're going to see what the play was that was sent in. And, you know, if there is some freelancing and that could be a lot of fun going forward. So enjoy the game this weekend. And we'll talk to you again down the road. Okay.
Most importantly, good luck with the restaurant.
Yeah, I appreciate
tonight.
It. Hey,
I'm really rooting for you.
As we say around here, sometimes we lose the road games, but rarely the road trips, you know. So I'm going to try to get some enjoyment out of it. Would love to sneak a little baseball if that opportunity presents itself, and then out to a little bit later dinner. So thanks for the time, okay?
See you guys. Thanks,
right.
Matt.
Kevin Burkhart of Fox Sports on the Burdick Toyota guest line on this Valentine's Day. We're brought to you by the Hoffman Sausage Company. Really got to get with the Hoffman people. We need gift baskets for all the different holidays.
So they got heart-shaped sausage?
Heart-shaped sausage, maybe links, you know, that kind of thing.
You could link it up in a...
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Find a way to get that done, the whole fleet of Hoffman sausage products. Okay, we're on Twitch. We're on ESPN Radio. We are back in a moment with Do We Care and more after this on ESPN Radio.
On Twitch, Q Sports Talk and ESPN Radio 97.7 at 100.1. Do we care?
Interesting.
I doubt it.
No, wait, the other thing. Tedious.
But we will do this segment anyway.
Don't care anymore. Don't care no more. I don't care what you see.
According to the New York Post, Alex Rodriguez has emerged as a potential new buyer of the New York Mets.
Let's do it. Why not? I mean, athletes are rich enough now that they can be in the consideration. I mean, they're not filthy, stinking rich like a lot of these hedge fund guys who actually are buying the teams. So he, I'm sure, would just be in a group in the way that Derek Jeter is in a group that bought the Marlins. But why not? Let's have a – Jeter's got a team. A-Rod's got a team. He stays in New York. He loves ball. That's the best thing I can say about Alex Rodriguez. He loves baseball.
Loves it, yeah.
And wants to be involved. He's not too cool for it or whatever. Different kind of cat, but God bless him. Hope he does it and it works.
It's a more aggressive move than his old broadcast partner just advising the team. He's like, no, I'm going to buy the team. That's right.
And you don't work here anymore.
Yeah, get out. But... Yeah, I wonder where like the legit. I mean, A-Rod's got obviously a ton of money. He signed multiple contracts that were worth more than $200 million each. I don't know what his total ended up being, since there was some overlap in there. But I don't know where the real money would come from. And would the Wilpons like let them run the team this time, or yeah. Who?
Or what would be the transition period? Yeah. 5 years? 10?
How long's the transition?
I mean, hey. Something's probably got to change with the way the Mets are operating. Obviously, the Wilpons don't sound like they have the financial stamina here to stay in it for a great deal longer. They want to be connected because it's been their livelihood. You certainly can't fault them for that.
Alex Rodriguez is stability personified, so that'd be perfect. It fit real well.
Maybe J-Lo can be the primary owner.
Sure.
They can...
There you go. Jenny from the block.
There we are.
Yankees would have three of those NL East teams' strong connections there. They've got the Marlins with Derek Jeter. The Phillies basically became the NL version of the Yankees this offseason with Joe Girardi, Didi Gregorius, a couple other moves, and then A-Rod. They'd have three NL East teams right there. We'll move on.
Okay.
Northwestern football head coach, Pat Fitzgerald. He actually did color on the radio for Northwestern's basketball game Wednesday night against Michigan. The game didn't go so well, but the call, pretty good.
Why do they call it maize and blue? It's yellow. I've never understood that.
Yeah.
Great contest by Spencer, the old man going up and contesting at the rim.
You sound good. Sound like you've been doing this your whole life.
We should mic me up on the couch. A little bit more F-bombs.
Does he need to slide his mic?
I just got a big head, so the mic, you know. A proud partner of Northwestern Athletics.
Nicely done.
I can read, Dave. School of Ed grad. Let's rock.
Love it. Love everything about it. Pat Fitzgerald, really likable guy. His partner there, you can hear a little bit, the longtime voice. In fact, they call him Mr. Wildcat, is Dave Ennett. He's an awesome dude. And great idea. Not everybody would be conducive for this, but I love his enthusiasm and gave it a good effort there. Good stuff. Inspires us maybe to try something. We'll have to do something a little funky around here, but it's not going to be Coach Babers, I don't think.
That's what I was about to ask you. How would he do?
He would take it much more seriously.
Okay.
And Coach, if you're listening, the door is open. Obviously, that we'll find him a seat and get him in there anytime he wants to come. But he would be more in the analytical aspect. Brian heard the one player whose name is mentioned there is Pat Spencer, the Loyola lacrosse standout and Tuaraton Award winner from last year. But I love everything about that idea. It shows Fitzgerald's passion for being there, and he's super connected to Northwestern. So good on those guys.
He handled the live read quite well.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a snappy little delivery.
And the longer version of it, I believe it was the outfit that provided his car deal.
Yes.
So he had
previous experience, yes, probably doing
a little oomph behind it.
Televised read for them, but maybe he can pop into a Medill class. He can sit in. I bet he could. He could pull at least a B in one of getting a professor at Don Day's class up there.
There you go.
At Northwestern.
Just spitballing here, Matt. And is Jimmy Boeheim? Is he a senior at Cornell? So maybe this doesn't work out.
Junior.
He's a junior. All right. Julie on the call for Syracuse Cornell next year.
That would be crazy. And she would say she would want no part of it.
Okay.
Now, she has done, Brian's done one or two of the games.
She's also joined us every year on the broadcast.
Yeah, it's pretty much a given that she participates there, but I...
During the game, or is she just like a pregame thing?
No, she'll sit there while
she's
the game's
done
going.
A full commercial-to-commercial segment with us like each year of that,
yeah,
of that game.
And I think we know what's going on there. She comes on and talks about how nervous she is and how much she loves everybody involved, and Julie's great, but...
Shows off the shirt. They got the collection of shirts.
New shirt of the year. But over the long haul, it's not as easy as people think. Anybody who's ever dabbled or tried to do that, but to even think that remotely you can be hopefully interesting for a 2-hour stretch while the game is going on, and follow all the little nuts and bolts kind of rules there. It's easier said than done, but I appreciate that Pat Fitzgerald gave it a try, and good work by Northwestern giving it a go there.
We're getting banana land here now, but what about Paulie on the call?
We've talked about that before. There's obviously a zillion reasons that has been
zillion love it
has been vetoed. That just
they speak for themselves.
Let's make it. We'll make that a Twitch Twitch segment. Why Paulie can't?
Okay, sounds
can't
good.
Do the radio.
Before we get to Twitch, one last thing here.
By the way, the other thing they did there is that feed clearly had some things that were not on the radio broadcast.
Yes.
Which maybe that's what we turned to. For Twitch and stuff. That could be kind of fun.
Yes, I think that would be a great idea. Last one, it's been a viral video going on online a lot here, and I know you guys are big travelers, flying a lot. There's a video of a man just softly punching, although before the video, the woman says that he full-out punched the chair in front of him when she reclined. Now, he's in the very last row, so he can also not recline. That's a big fact in this. How do you feel about reclining on airplanes and everything like that? It sparked this huge debate about that.
I think if you're going to go fully back, you need to know that could potentially irritate the person behind you. I think you have to know, are they maybe is it a child or somebody smaller that the amount of space you're taking up is not that big a deal? I think it's courtesy to ask. I'm always like a half at most kind of thing. Fortunately, knock on wood, first class problems, we don't travel on commercial flights very frequently, but once a year, twice a year that I might do it. I personally am a reluctant recliner. I do think punching the seat's a little much, but I do feel the guy's pain.
Now, the Delta CEO, has come out after this whole video and said that he thinks passengers should ask permission to recline. Do you think that should become the protocol?
A little bit, but I also can. Is there a way they can recline that's sort of a happy medium and we don't go any further? You know, just a little bit of reclining for comfort for the person in the forward seat, but not upsetting the life of the people. Because we've all been there. It's totally presumptuous. The only thing I would say, like, my first reaction typically is, man, this sucks, but I suppose I have the right to do it too. In this case, as you point out, the guy didn't. I've never felt comfortable pushing it back as far as it goes. Brian?
Yeah, I am almost always a non-recliner just because I find it to be rude in most cases. There's other ways. Yeah, could it be more comfortable? Yeah, it stinks if you're crammed in like that. But it also stinks for the person behind you and the person in front of you. So why are you the one that gets to be comfortable and I don't get to be?
Right.
I had one a couple flights ago at some point where I forget it was a JetBlue. It was a TV plane situation where the person in front of me reclined. I was watching the TV. Now the TV was very close.
Yeah, those sometimes
VR.
Because I will say,
I was right up in it.
Never come close to the point of punching the TV. But very frequently, you have the reaction of, "Really, dude? You're going to take the whole? How many ever degrees that you're going to take all of it? If it's six
is there
degrees,
a middle ground, or is it all or nothing for reclining?
I think you might be able to have a little
like
bit.
It's not like a clicking. It's not
and
all or none.
Okay. The real bad ones, they come back explosively.
Sure.
As soon as they go in.
Yeah.
And
some people go back that far without meaning to because the button.
Yes. Right. But you kind of want to say, hello, like, are you aware at all of the fact that there's somebody behind you here? And frequently they're not.
I'd say the flight's got to be at least like multiple hours for you to be coming back at me.
Right. And then you don't have to come back all the time. Maybe you can do that in shifts a little bit. You know, you can go back and go up. But I saw the video you're talking about. I didn't watch it long enough or care that much to see, you know, what was this woman's deal? She didn't feel like, oh, I'll relent a little bit here, or, you know, it's childish to be punching the seat, but
some people just feel if it's an option, I have the right to do it, you know, without even caring about the person behind them.
Correct. Well, we don't typically have much conversation with the people that were on planes,
right?
Typically,
unfortunately, the real option that would solve it all is the airlines making slightly less money per flight and giving us all enough room
exactly
to act like human beings. But that's not going to happen, so we'll continue to punch each other on airplanes.
Right.
Like if they just gave us literally like 2 more inches, the world we'd all be fine.
Yeah, and you know, there's probably, as you point out, it really wouldn't be that much, you know, and the whatever percentage of decline in revenue.
Take a row or two out and it would solve it?
Yeah, but again,
simple as that, really.
That, you know, that's $300 seats or $300 or whatever the flight
times
cost is times 12,
times 12
seats times three flights a day.
It's the reason that Red Sox traded Mookie Betts.
Right. And they, you know, but what price do you put on the comfort and the overall satisfaction of people?
None.
Okay, that brings the week of shows to a close. Got the announcements. I'm sure you already bought your Megadeth tickets. They went on sale today.
I hope so.
At 10 a.m. They're coming to the Amp July 23. You got the skating in the city down here. You got the police and fire playing hockey. You got the Crunch home tonight. You're up to speed. Have a great Valentine's weekend, everybody. Make a whole thing of it. Do your thing. We're off to Tallahassee, lacrosse and basketball, kinds of good stuff happening this weekend. Check your local listings. Back in the booth with John Wildhack on the show Monday at 2:00.